Good morning. Members of the Peace with Justice Group, as you have heard, are participating in today's service. And for the reflection, we're going to take the form of a dialogue. We call ourselves the Peace with Justice Group because we recognize that peace and justice are inseparable. In order for peace to be sustained and real, it must be accompanied by justice. So, we'll start with Gigi. We live in a violent world. We are bombarded constantly by the media, movies, politicians, reminding us how unsafe we are. Even the renowned historian Margaret Macmillan says that we are hardwired for violence and war. So I'd like to start by asking you, Gigi, how can we be called to be peacemakers in a world that has never been without war?
Well, when you asked me that question, I thought about an earlier life that I had at one point. And I met a Buddhist activist by the name of Sulak Savaraksa from Thailand. Sulak is a Thai lawyer who three times has been shackled with lèse majesté, as they call it, for insulting the king of Siam. Anyway, he says that every religion has two gods, a god of peace, or god of love, rather, and a god of war. The god of war is exclusive, has enemies, is judgmental, rules by fiat and fear, sees the world as good versus evil, us versus them, right versus wrong. On the other hand, the God of love is inclusive, compassionate, has no enemies, recognizes the good in everyone, as well as the possibilities for redemption for even the worst of us. This God loves unconditionally, rules by trust, and wills us to honor and act from the best that we can be. I believe that is the God that we are, that is calling us, rather.
So where in the Bible is the mandate for peace with justice?
Okay. Well, Karen Armstrong, in her book Compassion, reminds us that compassion is at the heart of all of the major faiths. It's not just in our Bible. If we look at the words that we call the Golden Rule, we find them in every faith. Don't look at this now, but when you get home, it's your new sticker for your, put it on your fridge, or if it's too big for your fridge, put it on your front door. These words are the basis of religious law, of our Ten Commandments, of the mandate for hospitality towards the stranger, that we should welcome him or her as if that stranger were Christ himself, or Buddha, or Abraham, or Mohammed, or Krishna, knocking at our door in need of food, or shelter, or hope. And of course, Jesus reminded us that whenever we give food or shelter or visit the sick or the person in prison, we are visiting him.
One of the most succinct comments on Peace with Justice was made by Canadian Ursula Franklin, who said, "Peace is not just the absence of war. It is the presence of justice and the absence of fear." Gigi, where do you feel, what do you feel is a faithful response to fear?
Okay, so much of our need to blame or demonize the other comes out of fear. Fear for whatever reason, maybe our vulnerability or our sense of inadequacy or our feeling that we don't have purpose or importance. Feeling maybe we've been ignored and passed over. It is striking how often in the Bible the words, "be not afraid," come up. I Googled it just to see, and sure enough, there it is, 366 times. That's one day, one for every day of the year plus leap year. And it's as though the writers of the Bible knew how deeply fear affects our actions and our attitudes towards one another. For a God of love, there is no other. There is no out group. We are all on this journey together. The Africans have a word for it, Ubuntu. I am because we are. There is no separating me from us. There is no them. There is just us. And that sounds a lot to me like justice.
Thank you, Gigi. So I'd next like to invite Maggie and ask how we might actually put peace with justice into practice.
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Bronwyn. Here at ESG, we sign letters 4 times a year for Amnesty International. And many of our congregation participate in other Amnesty initiatives throughout the year. Amnesty International is a global organization working to restore justice to people who have been prevented from exercising their basic human rights. There's so many areas of conflict in the world. Sometimes the authorities in a country go around the law or create laws to silence those who speak out. And this can extend to opposing views about land claims, LGBTQ rights, religious freedoms, journalistic freedoms, and the list goes on. It could just be someone who is in the wrong place at the wrong time or related to the wrong person. So Amnesty aims to restore justice in peaceful ways.
And how does Amnesty go about doing this?
Well, on the screen you see some examples. The idea is to bring the problem into the light by making sure the authorities know that the world knows what they're doing. So bringing pressure to bear on these authorities often results in releases of people in prisons or torture centers, or improvements in their treatment, such as access to lawyers, family, medical care. Amnesty uses traditional letter writing as well as online petitions and uses social media and demonstrations to bring attention to cases. They also do a ton of research into human rights abuses through interviewing refugees, fact-finding missions, attending trials in other countries, and more. Amnesty publishes a report each year filled with information about all countries, including ours, and how each country is responsible for injustice within their borders.
So, okay, I hear about the justice concern, but what about the peace part?
Well, Amnesty supports people who have expressed themselves through peaceful means, not aggression. It asks governments to find other ways to solve issues than detention and torture. I believe that true peace can only come when justice is complete. So that's how amnesty fits into the concept of peace with justice.
And does it work?
Well, we can't take credit totally for people's releases because there's so many factors, but the letters sure seem to help. For example, on the slide here, we have the Burks kids. We signed petitions for the Burks kids last spring. They're children of families making refugee claims in the United States who were basically imprisoned until their claim could be processed, which sometimes took years in the system. And this August, Diego, who's age 3, Joshua, age 7, Carlos and Michael, who are 4 and 16, were released with their mothers. They have pending applications for permanent residency in the U.S. And I know that's just a drop in the bucket, but at least it's getting somewhere. 2 years ago, we wrote letters to the authorities in Burkina Faso, asking them to stop the practice of forced marriage of young girls. And the Burkina Faso Ministry of Justice, Human Rights, and Civic Promotion has announced its plans to raise the legal age of marriage for girls to 18 years and to ensure that forced marriage is clearly defined in their criminal code. So I think that's a big win. There are many more cases we could discuss. Could be here all morning, folks. And lots of work still to do to protect human rights. But the letters do have an effect. And we will have cases for letter writing, put in a little plug, on December 2nd in preparation for Human Rights Day. So there'll be more info on that coming.
Thank you, Maggie. And finally, David, we've been hearing a lot about the international perspective. So why don't you bring peace with justice issues a bit closer to home for us?
Thanks, Bronwyn. It's natural to think of peace with justice on global and international terms. I like to think of it also in national and local terms. For example, why is Toronto the child poverty capital of Canada when Toronto is Canada's economic engine? Why is food bank use at an all-time high and the waiting list for affordable housing in Toronto 100,000 families long? Why are so many of our Indigenous sisters and brothers required to live without safe drinking water or a high quality of education? If all families and individuals were able to experience a decent quality of life, would we still experience issues such as gun violence and hate crimes? As individuals or even as a church community, we can help some people in need to a limited extent. Charity is needed and important, but only temporary. Systematic justice, on the other hand, meets needs for the long term. As a wealthy society with an abundance of resources, we could share the wealth more equitably so that all could experience a quality of life that would bring peace through economic justice.
Thank you, David. So, we've heard a number of different ways for people to work toward peace with justice in our world through participating in the work of organizations like Amnesty International, advocating for social justice through groups like Voices for a Just Society, which is made up of members of churches of North Toronto, including our own, learning about conditions in our world through activities like Compassionate Justice Speakers Series later today, as well as just looking for opportunities to solve conflicts peacefully through discussion and care rather than violence and hate. The important thing to us is that peace cannot be obtained at the expense of justice. Our goal must be, as Christ taught us, peace with justice, and to know that we are not alone. Thanks be to God.